Today's program has been brought to you by Hearst Ranch, the nation's largest single-source supplier of free-range, all-natural, grass-fed, and grass-finished beef. For more information, visit HearstRanch.com. You're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.org, a nonprofit, member-supported radio station. We're millions strong, with folks tuning in from over 200 countries. We are education. We are entertainment. We are the future of food. May is our membership drive. Become a member and support us while receiving e-newsletters, advanced invites, special discounts, and a membership card. We need your support. Visit our website and click the donate button to become a member today. Thank you for believing in us and enjoy the show. This is a special recording in anticipation of the 2013 Manhattan Cocktail Classic. The Classic is a celebration of the intersections between cocktails and culture. With nearly 100 events spread across 5 days in 3 boroughs and a multi-day trade conference to boot, the Manhattan Cocktail Classic offers a vast array of unique experiences to enthusiasts and professionals alike, expanding the very definition of what constitutes a cocktail event. This year's festivities kick off with the gala on Friday, May 17th at the New York Public Library. For more information about all of the events and tickets, visit ManhattanCocktailClassic.com.
Thanks for tuning in to the Heritage Radio Network. Today, we're going to be talking cocktails with someone who really knows her spirits. I'm your host today, Leah Eden, and we are on the line with Charlotte Voisey, an award-winning bartender and the portfolio ambassador for William Grant & Sons USA. Welcome, Charlotte.
Hi, thanks for having me.
We are so pleased to have you on the line as well. So you began your bartending career in London. In 2002, you opened the Classic Cocktail Bar, apartment 195, and were shortly thereafter, you were named the UK Bartender of the Year. And then a few short years later, you made your way over to the States to start working with William Grant & Sons, a family-owned distillery. And I really want to chat a little bit about that transition, but first want to go back and explore how you first got into the bartending world. So Charlotte, what was your very first bartending experience?
That must have been a while ago. My very first bartending experience was in London at a restaurant called the Chicago Rib Shack. Back in the day, it was a very busy restaurant right close to Harrods, so a very popular shopping area. We used to have all sorts of famous people come in. Princess Diana used to come there with the boys when they were little.
Oh, wow.
That's when I really kind of got behind the bar for the first time. A very different scene to how it is today. But it enticed me nonetheless. That's when I fell in love with it all.
Well, do you remember what kinds of drinks you were sort of pouring those first couple days, first couple of weeks?
I do very much. We had to study hard and learn the recipes and take exams. But these were drinks that everyone knows, old things like the Long Island iced tea, daiquiris, pina coladas, some other classics like the whiskey sours, Manhattans, where I learned to make martinis properly, other kind of forgotten classics like Between the Sheets. Memory fades a little now, but they were like the old, good old cocktails of that era.
Okay. And, at what point did you sort of decide or did you realize that bartending and the cocktail world was it for you? Was there a specific moment or sort of a series of events that led up to making it your own?
Yeah, it was definitely in 2002 when we opened apartment 195. What was happening at that time in London was there was a focus on serious cocktail making. And by that, I mean that people were being educated again, learning how spirits are made, understanding flavor, to better combine ingredients together to come up with delicious cocktails that were also using correct technique. Up until then, people used to throw drinks together and have a great party, but nobody really understood why you would stir a cocktail rather than shake it. Dale de Groff, otherwise known as King Cocktail from here in New York, came over to London and helped us get educated and inspired a whole generation of bartenders to really care. And that was the moment for me when things took a different turn.
That's interesting. And, we're here in New York City and, across our country, we're seeing some of that same refocus on, as you say, sort of serious cocktails and the techniques and not just throwing some rum and some coke in a glass and saying that's that. But, you know, it sounds like in London you were a couple steps ahead of us. Can you take us back to 2002 and kind of give us a sense of, you know, what was happening in the culture, what was happening in the cocktail world that led to this seriousness again?
Yeah, and we were a few years ahead. You know, that's just how history kind of came around again. There were a few very big personalities like Dale that came over and kind of made us all aware that if you look back in history in the 1800s, people were making cocktails a lot better. They had great ingredients. They knew what they were doing in terms of glassware, making sure it was chilled, making sure the size of the glass was appropriate for the drink, all that kind of stuff that nobody really thought about for a long, long time. So people were realizing that drinks could be better, they could taste better. And of course, that was one side of it. The next hurdle was to get the general public, our guests at the bar, to get excited as well, because otherwise there would be no one to enjoy these drinks. So that kind of came about a little bit slower, but slowly but surely we just built this great community of bars and bartenders who were able to infect the general public with their passion.
Right. And I think that passion is probably one of the key words. I mean, that's certainly what I see if I go into sort of a craft cocktail establishment and, you know, see the guy potentially with a mustache, maybe with a little suspenders, but, you know, very, very focused on what he's making. And what comes out is, of course, something that tastes delicious, but also has a very, you know, a very special look and sort of appearance to it. And so I would certainly imagine that the education, the training you've been talking about kind of plays a key role there.
Yeah, it very much does. And that's really how the cocktail community became strong again in London and was able to raise the bar and allow bartenders to break off and open their own cocktail bars. Because like I said, you can't just have one or two places doing this. You need to have a plethora spread over the whole city so that the guests kind of get excited and they get into it. And then once they're understanding that it's important, you know, the demand is there as well as the supply, and that's how things really take off.
Right. And now, Charlotte, from looking at the trajectory of your career, it seems like you've spent a great deal of time behind the bar, not just in London and not just in the States, but sort of traveling. I know you spent some time in, I believe, Argentina and Barcelona.
Yep.
So I'm hoping you can talk a little bit about some of the differences that perhaps you've noticed in the cocktail culture during your travels.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, America is the home of the cocktail. It's where cocktails were first mixed. It's where there's always been the strongest cocktail culture. Even here in the 50s, you know, people knew how to make martinis properly at home. In London, it wasn't the case. We had a whole different sort of drinking culture. We definitely have a strong drinking culture. But it was definitely sort of more beer led and wine and maybe sort of spirits mixed together, but in a very simple way. And as you tour different countries, you find sort of different cultures and different histories. But the one thing, the most valuable thing for me in traveling is being inspired by hospitality in different cultures. And certainly when you go down to sort of Buenos Aires, you just see their wonderful kind of joie de vivre, and that comes through in, you know, service and making people feel comfortable and just enjoying life. And whether it's cocktails or not, that's something that's definitely inspired me, the people I worked with down there. At the end of the day, what we do is it's the service industry. So the cocktail's very important and the education that goes into it too. But the people that you meet around the world along the way will inspire your attitude, and that's really the exciting thing.
Mm-hmm. And you speak about that, the importance of hospitality and service. And,
yeah,
you know, I know that in the cocktail world, you are somewhat known and renowned for sort of developing signature cocktails. And, you know, I'm wondering in the cooking world or in a kitchen, a chef might often be known for having a certain style or kind of a cooking sense. And I'm wondering, you know, does that cross over into the cocktail world? I mean, do you have like a moniker as a bartender, or would I know one of your drink creations just by seeing it or tasting it?
That's a great question. Possibly. I definitely think it does cross over. And if I think about my friends and peers and their styles, I could definitely give you, you know, a few adjectives for some of the key people, and I would be able to taste their drinks and know their style. Personally, I love to create and drink cocktails that are first and foremost delicious, but secondary, but then they don't take too much effort to enjoy. They should be effortless to enjoy for the guests, meaning that the flavor combination should be seamless. The type of ingredients I'm using should be easily understood. So not a drink that would intimidate someone, but a drink that, you know, immediately sounds delicious and performs so on the palate. So my flavor profiles are usually quite refreshing. I like to use subtle flavors and nice and bright cocktails. Other people might sort of have a lot stronger or sort of moodier cocktail styles. But it's an interesting one. And certainly I think when you get to know the personalities in the cocktail industry, especially here in New York, you can certainly start to follow their style of mixing.
Right. Oh, that's interesting to think that you could perhaps, you know, get a sense of a mixologist or a, you know, a bartender's personality from the drinks they're putting in front of you. I like that.
Absolutely.
Well, you talk about kind of that profile, that flavor profile, excuse me. And one of the interesting things that I've seen, not started to see, but have been seeing over the last couple of years in the craft cocktail world has been this sort of new explosion of ingredients, you know, looking beyond different kinds of spirits, different kinds of juices, but looking to herbs and vegetables and fruits and, you know, different kinds of ingredients that I may never have heard of. And I'm wondering for you, are there certain ingredients that you feel like you've discovered or have started to play around with in a different way that might not have been used in drinks previously?
Yeah, it's a great point. And we're always on the hunt for something else to put in a drink just to keep ourselves amused and to, you know, keep the creativity high. I mean, recently I've been using a lot of arugula in cocktails and lemongrass also. The arugula really mainly, you know, obviously been inspired by the use that it has in the kitchen and in food. But if you think about it, it has that delicate sort of savory and spicy sort of note, which will pair really well with any kind of spirit that has a similar vegetal and gentle spice, something like a really beautiful Blanco tequila or possibly even a gin. And when we look for these unusual ingredients, and people often ask me, you know, how do you even think of pairing that with this cocktail? It's all about the base spirit. When you taste the base spirit, just like when you taste wine, you really have to sort of sit there and study and figure out what are the flavors and aromas that pop out? And it could be things, you know, like cinnamon and nutmeg on the spicy side, or it could be vegetal notes, it could be herbaceous notes. And all of those things can then be translated into ingredients paired with the spirit in a cocktail.
Well, let's focus on, or let's talk a little bit about that focus on the spirit itself, because you transitioned from, you know, being behind the bar to working as an ambassador for William Grant & Sons. Can you kind of give us a sense of how that transition, how that journey happened, and what exactly it means to be an ambassador for them?
Yeah, it's a great transition, and it's worked out perfectly for me. It's not for everyone. Some people are able to keep up the pace of being a bartender forever, and my hat very much comes off to them. It's not an easy job. It's physically very demanding, and after you've done it for a while, sometimes you sort of look for, what else can I use my passion and skills for but that will allow me to sort of get to bed on the either side of midnight every once in a while? Also, my passion's always been education, so when this opportunity came up for me, I realized that I would be able to go out there and share what I had learned, what I've been lucky enough to learn from people like Dale and other mentors, and actually give back a little, all the while developing other skills at the same time. So education is the heart of what I do as an ambassador.
Okay, so give us a little 411 on them. You know, what kind of spirits do they make? What are some of your favorites that you like to talk about?
Yeah, so William Grant & Sons, it's a Scottish distiller's that was founded back in 1886 when Glenfiddich Single Malt was first made. So that's the one brand. The Balvenie came soon after. And then more recently, Hendrick's Gin. It's the brand or the bottle that I fell in love with back in London, and it's the reason that I first joined the company. It's a beautiful gin that everybody sort of knows and loves now, a great cocktail spirit. We also make a vodka from Iceland called Reykja, like Reykjavik, the capital. And then we have a tequila called Milagro. We've just released Monte Lobo, the mezcal from Oaxaca, also in Mexico. And then there's a laundry list. We have some wonderful sort of newer brands, a bit more innovative, a blood orange liqueur from Sicily called Salerno. We also have Tullamore Dew, which is a very well-known and loved Irish whiskey. Sailor Jerry spiced rum. Quite a few, enough to keep me very busy.
I would imagine. And, you know, the one that I was the most excited about is the Hendrick's Gin. It is absolutely my favorite. But, you know, Charlotte, I rarely do anything besides sort of pour it over a huge ice cube, maybe a little bit of lime. Can you, you know, give me maybe a suggestion of how to make something a little bit more unique or special with Hendrick's? Maybe, you know, something I can put together for my next party.
Yeah, so the wonderful thing about Hendrick's, it is so versatile, but simple cocktails allow it to shine very well. And there's an old favorite cocktail of mine called the South Side. It's very popular amongst my peers and friends. But a simple drink that mixes, in this case, Hendrick's, about 2 parts or 2 ounces with a 3/4 part of fresh lime juice or lemon juice and a 3/4 ounce of simple syrup, which is really simple to make. It's just equal parts sugar and water. You combine those ingredients and then add in a few loose, fresh mint leaves and shake that up very well. The importance of shaking the drink is up there. And then that would just be strained either over ice in a tall glass with a top of soda water, or you could strain it into a cocktail glass, a martini glass, for a bit more of an elegant drink. And the final touch, very important, is to garnish with a slice of cucumber. Is one of the ingredients in Hendrick's Gin that makes it so pleasant to enjoy.
Right. Oh my goodness, that sounds delicious. Are we not quite at 5 yet? But
not quite. Nearly. I can almost taste it.
Right. Right. Well, you brought up one thing that I've always been kind of curious about. You mentioned that it should be, you know, shaken, and you often hear when talking about cocktails this idea of like shake versus stir.
Yeah.
What's the difference? What does it do to the ingredients or to the alcohol, to the spirits that? You know, there's a difference between how you actually mix up the ingredients.
Yeah, so we shake and stir a cocktail for 3 basic reasons, and they're the same. It's to mix the ingredients together. It's to cool them down so we get a nice cold temperature. And the third reason is to actually get some dilution from the ice to make the cocktail more mellow and perfect to drink. The difference between the action of shaking and stirring is one of texture. When you have a cocktail that just has spirits, for example, a classic dry martini or a Negroni, which calls for gin, Campari, and vermouth, what you've got there is the opportunity to stir the cocktail because nothing is so heavy that it needs to be violently interrupted with a shaking motion. And by stirring, you still mix and dilute and get the temperature down, but you don't lose the structure of the spirit. So you keep the mouthfeel and the elegance of the silky body intact. So it's smoother, it's more elegant to drink. When you shake a cocktail, for example, I mentioned the lime juice and the simple syrup, well, they're too heavy. They need the more violent action of shaking to actually break them down and mix them into the cocktail properly. So you couldn't stir, but nor would you want to because of the structure of those liquids. The stir in a cocktail is all about the elegance of the mouthfeel, of the smoothness you get when you try a really good spirit by itself. That's really the main difference.
Okay. Thank you for the little lesson. That's much appreciated. I've always wondered that. Well, now that we've kind of gotten you back in the mindset of making drinks and kind of putting them back together, I'm wondering in your mind, what is or is there a difference between, you know, the language around being a bartender, being a mixologist? Do you identify as one or the other? Are they the same? You know, you hear those terms thrown around quite a bit, and I'm wondering what's your take on their relationship?
Yeah, I love this. You're asking all the sort of big questions. well, historically, I think a bartender has been somebody who tends bars, so somebody who works in a bar. And that job is, I have to tell you, if you've never done it, it's extremely demanding. You're physically on your feet, you're on the stage the whole time. So it's not just about the action of getting people drinks and cleaning your bar top. It's the action of having poise, having character, having personality, making sure people are happy, smiling at them, talking to them, keeping an eye on everything. It's quite demanding mentally and physically. And all the while, you're serving classic drinks, you might be coming up with your own drinks. A mixologist, I think, is someone who focuses on the combination of flavors, who focuses on creating cocktails, maybe perfecting old recipes or coming up with new ones. So a mixologist could work in a bar. A mixologist could also work in his or her apartment, could work in a studio, could work in an office environment, some kind of, you know, developmental bar ambiance. But the mixologist focuses on the science and the art of creating a drink. The bartender is physically working in a bar, so it has a bit more of a sort of social and people skills element to it.
Very interesting. Well, Charlotte, we are almost out of time, but you can be found at the Proper Pour at the upcoming Manhattan Cocktail Classic event. What do we have to look forward to during that event? Give us a sense of what's going to be happening with you there.
Well, there's two really exciting things coming up with the Manhattan Cocktail Classic, which is really, finally, New York's great cocktail party. It's in its fourth year now, and we'll kick it open on Friday, May 17th at the New York Public Library. If anyone is interested in cocktails and wants to know more, it really is the best place to be. You'll have some of the best mixologists from all over the country, not just the city, creating and shaking and stirring hundreds of different cocktails at night. So it's a great opportunity to try different styles of drinks, different styles of spirits. So that party is not to be missed. And then for the rest of the event, I'll be hosting a suite at the Andes Hotel with Small Screen Network, who produced my show called The Proper Pour with Charlotte Voysey, smallscreennetwork.com. And at that suite, we have a plethora of different events. We're doing a charity live auction with celebrity chefs to share our strengths on Saturday night. And then for the rest of the days, we've got seminars, we've got parties, we've got special tastings, and really a lot of different things. But it's all on ManhattanCocktailClassic.com.
Oh, that sounds fantastic. And the events that Charlotte's talking about are just some of many, many events that are running from May 17th through the 20th. You can find out more about them, as she said, www.ManhattanCocktailClassic.com. Be sure to get your tickets today. Thank you, Charlotte, so much for being with us. It was such a pleasure. We enjoyed chatting with you. And This special recording, like all of our 30 live weekly shows, are available for free as a download through iTunes, Stitcher. You can also tune in and learn more about our programming at www.heritageradionetwork.org. If you like what you hear, click that donate tab right now. Become a member today. Thank you so much for listening and stay tuned in.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.